On the afternoon of January 25, 2002, Kathy Chaflinski drove down I-43 in Ozaukee County with her two children. An encounter with a drunk driver would change Chaflinski's life forever. As part of our series High Tolerance, Phoebe Petrovic reports on one family bearing the greatest cost of excessive drinking.
That morning, Kathy Chaflinski had taken her son Jake to his five-year checkup, and she held him in her arms when it came time for the shots. That afternoon, Chaflinski drove down the highway, her five-month-old Lauren dozing, Jake counting trucks.
He goes, "Mom, I think I want to take a snooze. Do you mind if I take a snooze?"
Chaflinski said, "Of course not," and Jake nodded off.
In my head, he was asleep. And that's important to me because he couldn't see what was coming.
Chaflinski saw a car coming toward her. It was in the median, then it was in her lane.
Do I stop? Do I play chicken? What do I do?
She turned into the ditch, but the car swerved back into the median, and it T-boned Chaflinski's car. The driver, Wallace Stenzel, had had two martinis that afternoon. His blood alcohol was 0.10, just over the legal limit. Chaflinski rode in the ambulance with Lauren. At the hospital, she found Jake lying on a table, wearing one shoe, his hand ice cold. The doctor told her Jake died instantly. When Chaflinski's husband Bill arrived, she didn't know what to say.
I felt helpless. I looked at him and I said, he didn't suffer.
Doctors decided to transfer Lauren to the children's hospital. Bill stayed with Jake and Kathy went with Lauren in the helicopter.
And so as we're flying over the city, all I could think of is Jake would love to be in this helicopter for the right reasons.
When they landed, Lauren was rushed in for another procedure. But eventually doctors said it wasn't working. They asked Chaflinski if she wanted to be with Lauren while she died.
And all you could hear was the machines, the beep, beep, beep. You know, no one was saying a word.
A nurse stepped out of the crowd.
She said, "You know, it's okay. You know, come on up. She can hear you. Talk to her." And I did. And I always would rub her little head. And then I, you know, was holding her hand and rubbing her head. And I said, "It's okay, Lauren. I'm sorry I couldn't save you. Go home and be with your brother." And then she passed.
The beeping stopped. Chaflinski says Lauren looked like a porcelain doll.
I'm holding my little baby daughter, and she's dead. She felt like 100 pounds. And then my husband showed up, and he's looking at me, and I'm like, "Do you want to hold her?" And of course he cried and sat down and held her and rocked her.
The driver who killed Chaflinski's children, Wallace Stenzel, spent 8 years in prison. Sometimes Chaflinski has to remind herself that her children died 17 years ago.
To me, it was like yesterday, and it's endless.
Chaflinski says she and her husband have struggled with depression and suicidal thoughts, but she also says they made a choice to figure out how to keep living. They had more children, twins named Tommy and Andrea. Chaflinski sought therapy, took antidepressants, and went to church.
I believe I'm going to see them again, and they're with their Heavenly Father, and I pray for peace and understanding and guidance. And I don't know if I didn't have that, how I would be able to go on to the next date.
Chaflinski grew up in Wisconsin. She says she comes from a family of alcoholics, that her father drank himself to death, that her brother served several years in prison for drunk driving after Jake and Lauren died.
The night of the crash, my dad and my brother were drunk in my basement, and I'm sure one of them, if not both of them, drove home.
Addiction is widely recognized as a disease, but Wisconsin's drinking culture is potent. City groundbreakings and baby showers serve kegs. Wisconsin is the only state that classifies first-time drunk driving as a civil offense. Chaflinski refuses to call her collision an accident. She says it was entirely preventable.
How do you kill these cute little kids? I know you didn't mean to. But again, you had two drinks and they cost them their lives.
Jake and Lauren were just two of 292 people killed in alcohol-related crashes in Wisconsin in 2002. More than 4,000 people have died since. Phoebe Petrovic, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can read more about this story and see the rest of our series, High Tolerance, at WPR.org/alcohol. We're going to talk more now about the human toll of drunk driving with Frank Harris. He's the director of state government affairs with Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Frank, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Well, Frank, we heard the Chaflinski's story there. I'm imagining that this is the kind of story you hear a lot at MAD.
Yeah, and coincidentally, I actually worked with Bill Chaflinski during the summer of 2001 through 2003 at Grant Park Golf Course in South Milwaukee. And when I read that story, I put two and two together and remembered, just seeing him just even months after that crash. what he was still going through. And, you know, I've been with Matt for 11 and a half years, and you know, you see victim after victim going through this 100% preventable crime, violent crime.
Can you talk about the pain felt by families affected by these drunk driving fatalities?
Well, I can't personally because I'm not a victim, but I mean, it upends the world. Just one moment someone's there, the next moment they're not, or one moment someone's there perfectly healthy, the next moment they're injured, horrifically injured. And so this, yeah.
In my reading of our further coverage of these issues, I know some people who have lost family members to drunk driving go on to give presentations and talk to people who have been arrested for drunk mm-hmm. driving. Do you see that as an effective, hopefully deterrent for people who are brought in for that first offense?
Well, I mean, I think it's effective to do. There's been some studies on those sort of things called victim impact panels, there is some effectiveness to it helping to prevent repeat offenses. And at this point, you know, lawmakers need to enact data-driven approaches that are proven to reduce drunk driving fatalities and more importantly, to deter people from making the deadly choice to drive drunk in the first place.
What do you see as the most effective, as you say, data-driven pieces of legislation that a state could tackle?
Well, I think the biggest data-driven one is ignition interlocks for any convicted drunk driver. And Wisconsin currently, 33 states have laws like this on the books, including Iowa and Illinois. And Wisconsin currently, their ignition interlock law is limited, hasn't been touched since 2009. And it's limited to repeat offenders and those who have a 0.15 blood alcohol level. And we hope lawmakers do something to modernize this program, which is proven life-saving, reducing drunk driving deaths by 16%. And Matt likes ignition interlocks because they're more effective in reducing repeat offenses compared to just hoping for the best and suspending someone's license. And license suspension is a outdated approach that still too many is relied upon too much in this country. And then, you know, another thing is legalizing sobriety checkpoints. I mean, this hasn't even been discussed anywhere in Wisconsin. And then now states are even lowering the legal level to 0.05, Utah specifically. So enacted that, and other states are considering it as well. So there's a lot of things out there that lawmakers can do besides just putting window dressing of the issue of drunk driving. So hopefully lawmakers do something finally. I mean, it's been 10 years since anything truly significant has happened to fine-tune the law, and it's long overdue.
Now, people often point to the fact that Wisconsin is the only state that doesn't criminalize the first-time offense for operating while intoxicated. How important is that?
Well, there's different ways to look at it. So drunk driving is a crime, and it should be treated that way. That's the way Matt feels. Now, the dirty little secret in some of these states that do criminalize it, like a Michigan, for example, pretty much more than 50% of those first OWI offenses are pled down to a lesser offense. It's this commonplace. Same thing with Illinois. Iowa, it's probably not as bad. And in Minnesota, it's definitely, you know, it's still a criminal offense, but there's a lot of plea agreements. So, but still, at least in those states, it's treated as a criminal offense as opposed to just whoopsie doodles. I got blacked out drunk and I drove drunk and didn't kill or injure somebody, but I got arrested. Now I have to have higher insurance rates and I don't even have to go to court. I can just... So, you know, it's just drunk driving is a violent crime. I mean, it's killed over 500,000 people in the last 35 years in our country, and more needs to be more action needs to be taken to continue the decrease in this violent crime.
Is a cultural change part of the answer here, as you see it, where just to change attitudes toward the idea of driving after having that couple of drinks in the first place?
Well, maybe, you know, and I grew up on the south side of Milwaukee, and I remember going to the church festival after church festival, Catholic church festivals, and just, you know, remembering all the different beer-related games there at a church festival, for goodness sakes. And living elsewhere in the country, you don't really see that too much, where alcohol is intertwined so much with the culture. But that being said, in order to change the culture, you need to change the laws. And, you know, where Matt's at, if people want to drink alcohol and they're 21 and over, that's fine. Consume alcohol. Deal with the other side effects that alcohol might bring. But as long as you don't drink and drive, that's fine and dandy. Just don't get behind the wheel. And that's what we've been trying to preach for the last 39 years, rather. So, you know, there is a cultural change, but, you know, it's not the culture of Wisconsin to lose a loved one to something that's preventable. You know, I can see it being the culture to drink alcohol. That's fine as long as you're 21 and over and you wise up and don't get behind the wheel, because it's been 39 years that, you know, drunk driving fatalities and injuries has been pretty highly publicized in our country.
Looking nationwide, have you seen states moving in the direction of doing more things like ignition interlocks and some of the other moves you're looking for?
Sure. So 37 states currently legalize the option for sobriety checkpoints. You know, that's a sobriety checkpoints is a four letter word in Wisconsin, especially in the state legislatures. No one wants to touch it. The lawmakers are fine binding the hands of law enforcement in their activities to deter drunk drivers. And if that's the way lawmakers want to handle drunk driving, that's fine. Just there should be more saturation patrols. And now ignition interlocks, that's where we've seen the biggest move in DUI or excuse me, OWI reform in our country. You know, since 2006, Matt's top legislative priority has been pushing for the use of these devices for any apprehended drunk driver. And when we first started pushing for this in 2006, only one state, New Mexico, had a law that essentially mandated the use of these devices for all offenders. And now we're up to 33 states that currently require the devices. And most recently, Kentucky enacted a law in a Kentucky, you know, the bourbon state. They're able to enact this and get over the concerns of the alcohol industry. And we still see five or six states that are considering similar legislation. And I think the one bill, I mean, the one issue that is definitely coming up is probably that doesn't have as much public support is lowering the legal level to 0.05. But coincidentally, MAD did come out in support of 0.05 if a state lawmaker wants to consider pushing it in a state. But outside of Utah, no, not too many folks are going to really push that sort of proposal.
We're talking to Frank Harris, Director of State Government Affairs with Mothers Against Drunk Driving, about the human cost of drunk driving, the lives lost and people injured, and families affected by these incidents, and what state lawmakers can do to tackle the problem. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see Wisconsin have stricter laws on drunk driving? Should first-time OWIs be criminalized? Have you yourself been affected by a drunk driving accident? And what do you think about the specific recommendations our guest is calling for, things like, and Matt is calling for, things like ignition interlock devices, sobriety checkpoints, maybe lowering the intoxicated rate to 0.05? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about drunk driving and its costs here in Wisconsin. Frank Harris is with us from Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think drunk driving is a problem in your part of the state? If you had driven in the past when you think you probably shouldn't have, what got you to stop driving after drinking? If you're a student, what kind of things have has your school said about drunk driving? If you're a parent, what do you tell your kids? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Frank, talk a little bit for people not familiar with how these ignition interlock devices work. What are they? What do they do?
So an ignition interlock device is after someone in Wisconsin gets a certain conviction for an OWI, they will be ordered by a court to install this device in their vehicle. Essentially, it's an in-car breathalyzer where if you have any detectable alcohol in your breath, your vehicle won't start. Now, you know, we always say, well, we could have someone else blow into it or you could keep your car idling at the bar parking lot. So an interlock has what's called a rolling retest where within the first 7 minutes after you start your vehicle, you're prompted to blow into the device again. You're given 6 minutes to do this, and you could pull over the side of the road or just do it as you're driving. Then after that, a first initial rolling retest, it's more sporadic, between closer to 20 minutes to even 40 minutes. And again, with interlocks, there's about 13,000 of these in use in Wisconsin currently. And, you know, next week, MAD's going to be announcing some pretty interesting data on the number of times this has actually stopped somebody from driving drunk in Wisconsin in 2018. We're going to be announcing this at a conference of ignition interlock program administrators. And we found in 2018 in Wisconsin, interlock stopped 41,000 attempts to drive drunk. In Wisconsin, not the most populous state, obviously, that is the most interlock stops out of the whole country, more so than California, more so than Texas. But Wisconsin's interlock law is very outdated, and it needs to be fine-tuned. And I think Senator Wongkart is going to come up with a proposal to improve it. And there's a couple of proposals out there right now that are out there as well.
Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is with us in Door County. Jeff, hi.
Hi, how are you doing? Great topic. I live up in Sister Bay. 2 years ago at Fall Fest, someone was killed driving down the boat ramp drunk. And I understand that they can't have sobriety checkpoints, but there's only one way out of town. And if the police would have cars lined up and so people knew if you were driving drunk, it would drastically reduce the craziness that goes on up here. I know residents don't even leave their homes during these festivals, the people that live up here, because it's just so crazy.
Jeff, thanks for the call. So he's looking for more law enforcement in areas where there's going to be drinking, even if they can't have sobriety checkpoints, Frank.
Well, yeah, and they can do that right now. I mean, they can have saturation patrols and highly visible saturation patrols. And again, twice yearly, the federal government gives the state of Wisconsin money to do this. And there are law enforcement agencies that are doing this. They seem to be highly visible. Because, again, I mean, the goal of a sobriety checkpoint, goal of a saturation patrol is not to arrest anybody. It's to deter people from making the stupid choice to drive drunk.
Jeff, thanks for the call. We're going out to Alan in Weston. Alan, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Alan?
Well, you know, I'm in and out of the, you know, the alcohol thing, you know, quite a bit because I, you know, drive a tow truck on the weekends and I drive an 18-wheeler during the week. And so I see a lot of different accidents and whatnots with the DUIs and drunk driving accidents. I've towed a lot of them, actually.
And what do you think? Do we need tougher laws?
Yeah, I believe we need stiffer laws. I believe we need, more convictions, harsher convictions. If it's not alcohol-based, if it's drug-based, you're still intoxicated one way or another.
Alan, thanks a lot for the call. So Frank Allen has seen firsthand towing in the aftermath. Do you think people are just distanced from the impact of drunk driving, and that's why maybe we don't have tougher restrictions,
well,
Frank?
Well, I think society as a whole has been distanced from the impacts of drunk driving since the 1990s. 11,000 people died in 2016 in drunk driving crashes in our country. I mean, that's down 50% since 1980. Drunk driving is one of the top, it's the top leading killer, right around speeding and unbelted. Distracted driving is an issue, but that kills around 3,000 people a year. So, I mean, society has definitely been it's not the sexy topic anymore. Even in the traffic safety community world, in what needs to be done. But, you know, this is one of the areas where lawmakers can step up and do stuff to fix the loopholes in the drunk driving laws.
Thanks for the call, Alan. We'll go now to Tom with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
How are you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Tom?
Well, I lost a brother in 1974 to a drunk driver. He was home on leave from the Marine Corps because his wife had given him his first son, a son that he never got to know.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Tom.
Yeah, well, I'm one of 10, and that was the youngest, and that just about killed my mom. You know, he was just 18. But as far as the laws, they can't be strict enough. They have no idea how that'll tear a family apart. Because they're selfish and stupid to get behind the wheel thinking, oh, I'm okay, I'll be okay. No, it's just plain selfishness. They only care about themselves.
Tom, thanks a lot for sharing the story again. Sorry for the loss in 1974 for you and your family. Frank, are we hearing the voices? Obviously, the pain's still there for Tom. Are we hearing those voices enough?
No, absolutely not. I mean, first of all, MAD is always looking for folks to help out on the ground. There's a lot of things that can be done in Wisconsin. The lawmakers are not hearing it enough, and they need to hear it. The pain and the suffering and everything that needs to be done. And you know, again, where MAD's at, and I think people want to see change. We're not trying to, you know, we always get accused of acting emotionally. Well, we're trying to put forward data-driven approaches that have been studied, that are proven to reduce drunk driving deaths.
Tom, thanks again for the call. In our last minute or so, Tom, give us your top two or three things, or in budget season here in Wisconsin, your top goals for a state like Wisconsin when it comes to driving under the influence.
I'm Frank. I think, you know, we're hopeful that in Wisconsin, I mean, sobriety checkpoints is not going to happen. 0.05, never going to happen. But we believe that there can be improvements made to the first offender drunk driving law, specifically boosting the use of interlocks. And there's different proposals out there that can do that, that I think would be legislatively palatable and can be done in a way that will help create a future of no more victims. So there's plenty of proposals out there. We just hope something happens.
We'll leave it there for now. Frank, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Frank Harris, Director of State Government Affairs with Mothers Against Drunk Driving. He was with us today to talk about the impact of drunk driving in Wisconsin and what works to reduce it, what they're hoping to see happen in state legislatures around the country, including here in Wisconsin. This is part of our ongoing series with the WPR News team called High Tolerance, looking at Wisconsin's complicated relationship with alcohol. You can find a lot more of our reporting, features, and stories over at WPR.org/alcohol. And if you have a story, if your life has been affected by a drunk driving crash, you can share that with us. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or if you have thoughts about the legislative priorities we've been talking about over the last half hour, you can tweet us @CentralTimeWPR.